The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 266 for Wednesday, June 9th, 2010.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. Coming from downtown or south of Market, San Francisco, I'm Dave Hamilton here at WWDC.
Huh?
I know.
Wow, you're not in Durham, New Hampshire. And then This is John F. Braun, and I'm still here in Fairfield, Connecticut. And obviously, Dave, if I had to take a guess as to why you're in San Francisco, is that you're at this the show that some companies are putting on for developers.
Yes. Apple's WWDC conference. That's right. Yep. Came out Sunday. I'm actually in my room here at the Intercontinental, which we'll talk about a little bit too. But it's been an interesting show. We don't have a whole lot of time here, but the good news is we have seemingly excellent bandwidth at least right now, and my guess is that's going to continue. So we figured we'd do a call it a mini geek gab. We'll see. It may be normal length in the end, but we'll call it a mini geek gab. We do have some questions that would be good to go through, I think, John. But let's talk about some of these things that have come up this week. There have been quite a few things that have come up this week, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll let you lead because actually I did. I was talking yesterday and maybe talking a different podcast about what was announced at WWDC.
Sure.
Maybe getting your fresh perspective.
Got it. I'm going to go back and we'll do a little bit of a travel geek gab too, right? Because I'm traveling. So my flight out, this is a bad time of year to have to fly east to west because the jet stream is always really, it seems, and we don't have Pete here to help and chime in and correct us when we're wrong, but it always seems like this time of year, the jet stream is quite strong. With headwinds when you're going east to west, and of course tailwinds going the other way, and so our flight was supposed to take 6 hours and almost 40 minutes, which from Boston to San Francisco is pretty long. As soon as we took off, I was on JetBlue, and if you haven't flown JetBlue, you know they've got these little displays, you know, in the seat where you can watch TV, but you can also watch a live map that shows your current altitude, speed, and position overlaid onto a Google map. And you can see the track that you've taken, kind of like Indiana Jones style, you know. And as soon as we took off, you know, there's many different routes, and there's reasons for taking various different routes. But as soon as we took off, we headed way north, and we were way over Canada for, you know, a good portion of the beginning of our journey. And I thought, yeah, that's right, those headwinds this time of year, that jet stream goes in a weird direction, and we're trying to get around it. But I thought, this isn't going to be good. This is going to take a long time.
Well, did you fly out Sunday, you said?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we also had tornado warnings through a bunch of the area.
That's true. That's right.
And so I think you probably want to avoid those.
Yeah.
So there's probably, some very, which I'm like, huh? This isn't Kansas or whatever. Yeah. Right. Tornadoes are not very common in Connecticut, last I checked.
No, they're not. Well, we saw them quite a bit in Texas, but yeah, exactly. So, and we did. We had tornado warnings at home, too, which is rare. So we got about 3 hours into the flight, and the captain or the, you know, first officer come on the thing and say, I just want to update you on the status of our flight. And I looked at the guy next to me. I said, we're landing. And he's like, what? And the captain says, unfortunately, these headwinds, we don't have enough fuel to get to San Francisco. So we're going to go ahead and land in Salt Lake City and refuel, and we'll get you back in the air just as quickly as we can, but we don't have enough fuel. Now, that's not true. They have plenty of fuel, right? But they, you know, they push up against their safe limits and their comfortable limits and all that stuff. So my idea was that we just eject all the luggage. Listen, fuel and landing fees are expensive, right? So if we just eject all the luggage and they write everybody a check as they get off the plane for their luggage, I think everything would be fine. You know, $300, you're good to go, right?
Guessing that you only had carry-on?
No, actually, I had stuff in my thing, but, you know, a couple 300, not more than a couple $100 worth of stuff, you know. I also thought maybe we could eject some passengers. But the good news was we were only on the ground for 20 minutes, and then we were back in the air. So we landed less than an hour late, which isn't, you know, all things considered, wasn't so bad. The reason I tell this story is because it was my first plane ride where I had the iPad. Now, you'll remember that I had some complaints about traveling with the iPad when I was in Washington, D.C., specifically the lack of flash and you know, websites that required it and that sort of thing. But as a travel device, this thing has turned out to be fantastic for a couple of reasons. One of them is just its form factor. As I've always said, I hate the laptop hinged disaster thing. I don't want all that, you know, stuff on me. And so on the plane, the iPad was perfect for – I went through a bunch of old email. I watched a movie. I played some games. And so the form factor combined with the battery life, you know, I wasn't even worried at all about running up against my, you know, my battery. They say the thing's got a 10-hour battery life. In my experience, it's actually been a little bit more than that. And it's worked out great. And then once I got here, you know, it's the perfect – I want to talk about our live coverage kind of as a separate thing. But it is the perfect device at a conference. You know, you're in a session and, you know, you're taking notes or you want to check your email or whatever you want to do. It's great because, again, the form factor is perfect, as is the battery life. I had it with me all day on Monday, and I did use it to do our live coverage and then, you know, had some sessions in the afternoon. And I was down to maybe 50% battery life by the end of the day, which, you know, and I almost didn't even charge it on Monday night, but I figured I don't need to be quite that cavalier about everything.
Now, that's a little contrast to a piece that you did recently. But then I'm going to guess that that's because what you ran into, from what I recall before, was that your surfing experience was very unpleasant the last you traveled, and I guess you didn't run across that this time.
Well, yeah. Again, it was the lack of flash that was the real issue for me. The last time, and this time I'm in a town where it came down to restaurant menus, right? You know, so many of those sites are in flash here. It's a different travel experience for me. I know I visit the city all the time. I know where I'm going. I don't need to be doing that sort of web surfing here, and it's worked out great.
Sure.
Yeah, no. And it really is the perfect travel device. In that respect. The one thing, and of course this is coming in iOS 4, that I miss is, you know, any sort of backgrounding multitasking. You know, I jailbroke my iPhone several months ago, but I had not jailbroken my iPad, so I have no ability to put apps in the background and have them, you know, return exactly as I left them. And that gets frustrating when I'm sitting in a session, I want to take some notes, then maybe I want to, you know, if the guy gets into something that's boring for me, I, you know, maybe check Twitter or whatever, and then, oh, now back, I want to take some notes, and, you know, shifting around like that. It's a little bit cumbersome when you can really only have one app, you know, active at any point in time. But otherwise, it's a fantastic thing. So
cool.
Yeah. So do you want to hear the story about the live blog, John, and how we did that? It's, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and of course, you know what it was like in the early days, because you and I did it with our Palm devices.
And then wireless and all. But yeah, and I even, you know, alerted the masses. I was actually kind of shocked when I went to the live coverage page. And, I think we had some technical difficulties. But I was saying, oh, my gosh, look at TMO. They're using a Google Wave.
Right.
I didn't think it was good for anything. And it looked like a very novel application of Google Wave. Because, again, I tried using it for a while, and I guess I just don't grok it or... I didn't know enough people that grokked it and used it for a collaboration tool. And maybe that's because, in this case, it wasn't a collaboration tool, really. It was more a, you know, publishing platform.
Right.
But I saw there was a hiccup. But anyways, while it was working, it was pretty good.
There was a minor hiccup in the middle, and we just had to refresh the Wave. So what Steven did, and I'll preface this by saying, you know, we are still looking to hire a replacement webmaster here. Steven is moving off. So if you have LAMP skills and the interest in becoming TMO's webmaster, email me, dave at macobserver.com. But yeah, what Steven did was he had the idea of using Google Wave as kind of the foundation or the public front of this publishing platform. And then he built an app at appspot.google.com, their app publishing engine. It's kind of their cloud-based app engine, and he wrote it in Java. And it populated the wave, and it also provided us with a backend to log into, and it provided us with a static page, a non-wave-based page for mobile devices, because Wave doesn't really work well on the iPhone or the iPad, at least not in the way that we needed it to. So if you were running on an iPhone or an iPad and you went to the live coverage, it automatically redirected you to this AppSpot page. But it was really, really cool. And you just kind of throw money at it and say, I want to have, this much bandwidth available and this much CPU available. And I think it cost us, $14 or something. It's not that much money, right? But that's partially because the Wave handled the bulk of it, and you get the Wave, for free. So, it was pretty cool. And I was able to do all of our coverage. So I was doing the coverage, most of the blow-by-blow coverage right from the iPad. I was connected to Apple's wireless network, and we should talk a little bit about that too. And then Brian had his camera, and he had an iFi card in the camera. We configured the iFi card to connect to our MiFi device, and then the MiFi, I'll talk about what this technology all is, but it would FTP all the pictures up to a directory that then back in the home office, Jeff and Steven were taking those and publishing them. iFi card, in a nutshell, and we've talked about this before, but just to kind of go through the technology, the iFi card is a card that allows your camera to have a Wi-Fi circuit in it, and you can configure it to do what you want to do, but basically we had it configured to send up every picture that was taken immediately, and you connect it to a Wi-Fi hotspot. In this case, a Wi-Fi hotspot that we were using was our MiFi device, which we've talked about before,
is this the latest one?
It's a Verizon.
I meant the iFi.
Yes, it was the latest iFi card.
Yep. Okay, because I'm actually wrapping up a pretty in-depth review of that.
Okay, cool.
Because the other nice thing I noticed about that card that they did not have in the past, and this is something we may want to use in the future, is you can now transmit to an ad hoc network.
Well, yeah, not as well as you might think.
Okay, my experience has been positive. It's very fast. It's point-to-point. It shoves it right into the computer versus requiring an access point. So.
Right. Yeah.
But I understand what you did. I mean, there are a number of ways. There are a number of ways that it can send it to, Flickr and MobileMe and all this stuff, or FTPs, you pointed out. But anyways, no, it's so far I'm pretty impressed with the card. It's they keep getting better.
Yeah, they do. It's a cool thing. So he was able to take pictures, and as soon as he snapped the picture, he could just put the camera down, and then he could do his own coverage, and he didn't have to worry about, okay, now how am I going to get this picture from the camera to my computer so that I can then upload it or whatever, right? It was this mostly automated process. Now, this is a good lead-in to talk about what happened with Wi-Fi at the keynote. Now, if you watched along with our live coverage, I think they took this out of the stream that they posted, right? Apple posted a stream of the keynote afterwards. But there was this issue when Steve went to demo the web page loading between the iPhone 3GS and the iPhone 4. He wanted to show that it was, of course, not only faster, but had higher resolution on the page, and he was going to show the New York Times. And the iPhone, he had a two sets of them ready to go. The iPhone 3GS on both sets loaded the page fairly well, and the iPhone 4 did not. And, he was frustrated or whatever, as you might expect. And then he came back later and he said, okay, now I've figured out what's going on. People in the back have figured out what's going on. There are over 500 wireless networks in this room right now. Now, Apple only had two. They had a 5 gigahertz network named WWDC and then a 2.4 gigahertz network named iPhone, which is what they use all week for WWDC. That's how they've done it in the past, and that's how they're doing it this year. And then there was everyone and their brother using MiFis, and some people with cards, USB cards or USB devices on their laptops, and then doing ad hoc networks, like you said, John, sharing their connections that way. And so what happens is, you know, why – and Glenn Fleischman actually wrote a great article we'll link to in the show notes about all this. But what happens is it wasn't that the air was congested with too much bandwidth. It was congested with too many access points. And sure. So they're, you know, Wi-Fi devices essentially are built to accept as much interference as exists and participate in a friendly way in the network, right? So that means waiting for an opening and then saying their piece. There's no real interruptions, right? So all these devices basically shut down and stopped doing anything. And we had the problem too. We, you know, there was a gap in the middle there where we were unable to get pictures to upload because we were using the MiFi to do this. And they were just uploading really, really slowly, even though no one – there was only one device connected to our MiFi, right? It was the camera. It wasn't like we were sharing it with 1,000 people. But it was this same problem. So Jobs came back out, and I think this is the part they cut out of the keynote. Mm-hmm. But Jobs came back out and said, okay, look, you know, this is what's going on. I need you all to turn off your MiFis. He says, don't get me wrong. You know, I believe in live blogging and every blogger should be allowed to blog. I'm not trying to censor anyone, but I'm trying to do my demos and all your MiFis are getting in the way. So police each other, make sure, you know, your neighbors turn their MiFis off and this, that, and the other thing. And that way we can get on. And of course, you know, the issue at that point was we could not get the camera, the iFi and the camera, we could not get it to associate with Apple's networks. And we tried. We actually plugged it into my laptop and I was trying to reconfigure it. So we had to use the MiFi in order to get pictures up. So we dutifully turned our MiFi off. And then about 4 minutes later, I noticed pictures appearing on the site. I'm like, what's going on? I look in Brian's pocket and I see the MiFi blinking. Steve's demos worked just fine. It was great. Everybody turned off their MiFis, and finally, suddenly, you know, you could actually use the bandwidth in the room. So, and I make no apologies for that because
well, you weren't the only one. I saw a lot of other people say, "I'm not shutting mine off."
No,
but enough people did that it.
Oh no,
it's funny because
they definitely shut them off. I mean, there were a lot less networks on it.
Yeah.
Certainly, the majority of the people did shut them off, and we shut ours off initially, but then, like I said, Brian just kicked.
But it's interesting because it sounds very much like the early Ethernet networks.
Yeah.
When they were collision-based, and that they would, I think, do the same sort of thing, is that everybody would try, if two people tried to talk and they detected that someone else was talking, they'd be like, I'll be quiet for a certain amount of time and then I'll try again.
That's right.
And the problem was that, as I'm seeing in Wi-Fi, and I think it's a very similar comparison, when you get way too many people using it, that type of network, it's like exponentially goes into the toilet.
Yeah. Now,
it's terrible. So.
What was interesting is the... that the 3GS, when Steve was doing that demo and having problems with the iPhone 4, the 3GS loaded the page fine both times. It might have been a little slower than it needed to be or what have you, but it definitely and consistently, you know, loaded better on the 3GS three or four times that he tried it on two different sets of devices. And I don't think there's a design flaw in the iPhone 4. But I think one of the design choices impacted that, and it's that the iPhone 4 has the ability to communicate at 802.11n. Now,
right.
I don't believe it's a 5 gigahertz chip. I think it's 802.11n over 2.4 gigahertz.
Which is – I looked – if I'm not mistaken, the MiFi – is a B or G device and a 2.4. I looked
right.
This up actually.
It's the MiFi is a 2.4 device, and so the relatively educated discussions that I've had with a lot of people here at WWDC, and it's a great place to be because there's lots and lots of very, very intelligent people. Most of the people here are used to being the smartest person in the room everywhere else they go. So these conversations are very interesting. And the thought is that 802.11n is more – because the bandwidth is greater, it's more sensitive to – it's a completely different protocol from B or G, even though it operates in the same mm-hmm. bandwidth space. And that it's more sensitive to interference than G devices would be. And so that was, you know, that was the presumed reason that the iPhone 4 was not nearly as happy.
So. I'm just wondering why he chose to use Wi-Fi instead of 3G to do this.
He's in a concrete structure, you know.
So there was no – okay, there was not adequate cell coverage. Okay.
I don't think either of his phones had had AT&T service on them. I don't think they had 3G service enabled on them.
Okay. Because yeah. I know you can get repeaters and stuff like that. Yep. Well, you were talking to me, the microcell.
Yeah, the microcell. Like right. They could have done that, but no. Okay. They were using Wi-Fi, and I'm sure they were using their own private Wi-Fi network that was separate from the public ones. You know, I don't think it was that. I think it was just that, you know, it there was too much. It wasn't a well managed network, right? Because there was, instead of having the right amount of base stations, you know, you can service several thousand people over Wi-Fi. That's not a problem. It's that when you have several thousand people trying to be their own service in the same area, it, you know, if you manage it properly and you know, put intelligent network design into it, then you're fine. But this was random network design or chaos, anarchy network design.
And that they were the problem was it wasn't too many clients, it was too many bases.
Too many bases.
That's where at least this, I understand what you're saying. If it had been set up beforehand, or if they had tested, obviously they couldn't have tested the scenario where there were hundreds of people running.
No, that's right. No.
Okay, but he handled it a lot better than he has in the past. I don't think he threw anything at anybody.
No, he was very calm about it. But you know what's interesting is, you know, the part of the issue that creates this is all of us there live blogging this keynote, right? Which is great. You know, people want to read that stuff. But if you'll remember, you know, we used a live blog a long time ago, late 90s, early 2000s, and then Apple started doing their streaming of their keynotes. Now, we would still live blog those because many people at their desks could not sit and watch the stream, so they wanted to get the blow-by-blow. So we would live blog it, but oftentimes we live blogged it from our desks remotely. We weren't doing it right there in the room. There was no need. But then Apple stopped doing the streaming, and I think, and I gotta research this, but I think the time they stopped after right after Jobs threw that camera at that woman, because they realized they wanted the ability to edit things out, like they did. They edited out the comments about it, all these Verizon MiFi or MiFis. He didn't say Verizon, I don't think, but you know, all these MiFis. They didn't. You know, that wasn't a part of what you would see if you went. So they wanted the ability to edit and. You know, it is what it is. They get to do what they want to do. It's their own company. But if they want to do away with this obsessive need for all this live blogging, they could simply stream the darn thing. But
I wonder if they could, because I mean, you know this. I mean, radio almost always has. I realize, you know, radio is audio.
Right.
But radio, I think all radio does this, is that they have a, you know, 4-8 second delay. So if anybody, you know, drops the F-bomb, they can beep that out. Now, I realize that that's probably a bit more complex on video. And,
you can certainly bleep things out, but to edit out segments live,
it's a whole.
Good luck. Good luck. So anyway, you know, let's talk about our first sponsor here. And today, our first sponsor is GoTo Assist Express from Citrix. And it's a fitting sponsor, being that I'm traveling, and it's the kind of thing that you might use when you're traveling. You know, you've got computers at home. Sometimes you want to control those. And GoTo Assist Express lets you do just that. You can set up a session. You can either do it live, or you can set it up ahead of time. So I could have, in theory, set up a session ahead of time at home. Then I log into the web on my GoTo Assist Express account. And as long as I can get to the web, I'm going to be able to make this work. Even though I'm on a hotel network here and my computer's at home or on a network there, all I need to do is have the session set up. I go to GoTo Assist Express on the web, log into my account, choose the session, and boom, I'm connected to my computer at home. I can control it. It's as though I'm there. My keyboard and mouse here, or keyboard and trackpad here, are my keyboard and trackpad at home. So GoTo Assist Express allows you remote access of computers of various different kinds, used a lot by consultants to control clients or family members or friends, but also certainly could be used to remote access into your own machine. All this GoTo Assist Express is available at GoToAssist.com/gab. That's our own special URL that gets you an extra 30 days, or your first 30 days, for free. You can cancel at any time in that first 30 days. Your account will be good for the entire 30 days, regardless of when you cancel. But, of course, you won't be charged if you cancel. Yeah, if you decide you want to keep it, well, that's fine. Go to Assist Express at gotoassist.com. gotoassist.com/gab. One of the other things that was announced on Monday, John, that I want to talk about is Safari 5. You okay with talking about Safari 5?
Oh, sure. There's a whole bunch of, I think it's... Yeah, I saw that too. I mean, you know, like an idiot, I downloaded it immediately without really knowing why. But it was new.
Right.
I don't know if it necessarily deserves a point, you know, an entire point upgrade.
Yeah, it does not use WebKit 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not ready for prime time yet, so it's good that it doesn't use WebKit 2, but right. It does not.
But faster, yeah. You know, bug fixes, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other feature that was kind of controversial. I can't remember what it is, Dave.
Well,
maybe you remember.
Let's talk about the rest of the things, just in case there's something to mention here before we get into mm-hmm. this reader functionality. So they've got a new JavaScript engine that they say is lots and lots faster.
Yep.
And we believe them because that's no, we don't. We'll test it, but it stands to reason that it's faster.
I thought Brian did a quick.
He may have. Yeah.
I think someone at TMO did a quick, and it seems to be in some cases faster.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Okay. They did add DNS prefetching to Safari 5, which is pretty cool. The concept there is when you visit a website, there's all these links on the page. Some of the links are to other pages on the same server, and then some of the links are to pages off the server, right? And when you click on one of those links, the first thing that happens is your computer needs to translate the name, say www.macobserver.com, into an IP address before it can make any communications happen. And that lookup takes a little bit of time. It can take a lot of time if there's some delay or network lag, but it definitely, you know, adds time to the process. So what this does is once the page has finished loading in the background, the browser goes and looks up the DNS. It does all the DNS lookups for everything that might be linked from that page. That way, if you click something, it feels a whole lot snappier because it's already done some of the work in advance. So that was actually pretty cool. Kind of a, you know, we're the Geek Gab here, so geeky features are a good thing.
Okay, I saw that. What else here, I guess?
Well, they added Bing as a search option.
Yeah.
Which is cool. They left the interesting thing, you know, they left Google as the default, which, you know, is good, I think.
Sure. But that's nice to I know Bing is it's good to have options.
Yes.
So that was I don't think that really shocked anybody. It wasn't like, you know, the head of Gates up there like at prior shows where people were, you know, booing and cursing.
Right.
I think they have better HTML5 supports.
They do.
Seems to be the direction that they're going versus some other technologies.
That's right. And they added the ability to do extensions. Now, this is something we've had for a long time in Firefox, but now we have it in Safari. And I've been able to see some sessions on how to build these extensions. Really, really straightforward stuff. You're just building it with CSS and JavaScript. You don't need to know any C to code these things.
Which is like a plugin, right? Because I'm like, well, what's the difference? So
yes.
A plugin is one way to extend browser functionality,
right.
But it involves you coding something in C. So extensions require no programming knowledge, but
yeah, they do require programming. I mean, you got to write JavaScript to make them work, but it's, you know, if you know how to design a website, an interactive website, you know how to design extensions, and they can do some really cool things. So I think this is going to be a huge thing for Safari, and it does work on Mac and Windows. Extensions do not work on the mobile devices, at least not yet. And, you know, Apple doesn't comment on future plans.
Okay. Because some people were asking me, I'm on Tiger. What about me? And I believe they bumped the Tiger version of Safari, but it's still, I think it's 4.1 now.
Yeah, I think it was a security bump or
Yeah. But I think it was just security, and maybe they added Bing, but I don't think they added all of the other stuff. So,
right.
So I think they're just, this is for Leopard and Snow Leopard only.
Right. So So now that leaves us with, and there were a couple of other things, but those are to me, those were the highlights. And then they added this functionality called Reader. And the idea behind Reader is this. They detect when a page has an article in it. And if you click, and then they display this thing called the Reader button. And if you click the Reader button, it, in its best effort, attempts to just show you the text of the article. It comes up as kind of a page overlay. It dims the web page behind it and just shows you the text and graphics that are part of the article. It doesn't show you any of the logos. It doesn't show you any of the ads. It doesn't show you any of the comments. It just shows you the article as though you, you know, almost as though you printed it to a PDF and formatted it yourself. And on the surface, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, right? It's nice and clean.
Yep.
You know, it gets rid of, and here we go, any potential distractions to a nicely laid out, almost book-like,
right.
Viewing experience. So, looks pretty cool. And here's where we can get into the debate now.
Yeah, well, I don't know that there's a debate. I think it's a discussion because it's pretty darn clear what it does, and that is, in its own way, it blocks you from seeing the ads, right? And there's this misconception, and yes, folks, it's a misconception that stuff on the web is free. And I'll use Mac Observer as an example. I'm not going to speak for other people, although I think I could. But you know, at Mac Observer, none of the articles are free. You don't have to pay cash. The payment is that you allow us to show you the ads that we choose. And really, you allow us to show you the content in the format that we choose with the ads and any other assets that we like, right? I mean, we've got a nav bar. That nav bar is simultaneously functional, and it's a bit of marketing, right? It allows us to show you what else we have at the site so that perhaps you'll find something else that you're interested in. You know, we show you the Apple stock quote over there, and then that links to our finance board, right? There's this integration that happens where we try to provide something that's obviously going to be of interest and or of value and or of entertainment. And at the same time, we want you to look at more stuff on TMO because more page views is a good thing. More readers coming to the site is a good thing because, again, of the ad revenue and affiliate revenue and all this other stuff. So sure. Reader essentially blocks those ads.
Now, I used so of course I told you I installed it and I used it, and I guess the only thing the only observation that I want to make, Dave, is that you can't just jump into Reader.
This is true.
To load the entire page, at which point though I see where you're going. It's a discussion. So at some point you may have to briefly view what the publisher, TMO or otherwise, intended.
Well,
you could certainly not scroll anywhere. So you could certainly load a page and immediately click on Reader and totally ignore all that other stuff. And I think that's what you're bringing up. And some people are certainly going to do that. So I think I'm with you in that regard, that you may get a population just like the population that install ad blockers that are going to do that. And now it's kind of endorsed by the browser.
Right, right. And that's the problem, is it fosters – I think most people who block ads or who, you know, do this Reader thing do so, again, with the sort of the tacit misunderstanding that the content is free to do with as they please. I don't think any of these people would walk into a grocery store, grab a pack of gum off the shelf, put it in their pocket and walk out, even though chances are they could do that without being noticed. Or you know, even there would be no discussion. They could just do it. But they wouldn't because they know it's wrong. In this sense, yeah. I don't believe people know or believe that it's wrong. And that's incorrect, right?
Yeah, so, well, but I don't think that's a fair comparison.
I don't see any difference there. Now to address your point.
I'm gonna point out a little hypocrisy on your
Okay, go ahead.
Moment.
Go ahead.
Do you ever fast forward on your TiVo?
I do.
Now, last I checked, television stations also derive ad revenue, and you are going against their wishes by fast forwarding through the ads. I think that's a more accurate comparison than walking into a store and stealing something.
That's an accurate comparison when you're talking about the ads on the top of the page. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll address the TiVo thing because it does seem like a hypocritic thing. And maybe it is. I don't see it that way, but I understand some might disagree.
Of course, I pay for my – on the other hand, I'm going to back up what I said. You and I both love TiVo.
Sure.
On the other hand, I pay for cable.
Right.
So I think I feel somewhat a sense of entitlement that I should be able to skip the ads because I'm already paying somebody.
Right, but you're not actually paying for the content. And that's the other misconception.
Right.
So,
right.
All right. So we're on the TiVo thing, so I'll address that quickly. The reality is with TiVo, I wind up watching more ads than I do when I'm not watching on TiVo. And the reason is if I'm watching TV live, which I don't do often, but I do, as soon as the commercials come on, I tune out. I either walk out of the room or I go and like check Twitter or check my email or something like that, right? Whereas if I'm fast forwarding, my eyes are glued on the TV, and if I see something that interests me, I actually rewind. And this happens, you know, if I watch an hour-long show, I probably watch somewhere between 2 and 5 of the commercials. And I rewind, and now I'm totally engaged with that commercial, right? So, yes, I'm skipping through them, but I'm watching for the ones that actually, appeal to me. And then I go back and I do it. And clearly, commercials are built with that behavior in mind. They are built to catch the attention of people that are skimming through. So in that sense, no, I don't feel hypocritical. But okay. And I get where some people might disagree. But here's the thing, and here's where the pack of gum analogy comes in. So if you visit TMO, there's what we call, and this is a holdover from the newspaper days, but above the fold and below the fold. And there are ads above the fold, and we kind of use that as, in the first – maybe 700, 800 pixels from the top of the page, right? And then there are ads below the fold. You see everything above the fold, even if you went to the page and hit the reader button. You at least see it. And if it's of interest to you, you might go and gaze at the ad a little bit more just to see what it's about. If it's not of interest to you, you're going to ignore it anyway. What happens, though, is if you go to the page and hit the reader button, you're not seeing any of the ads below the fold. And those ads are quite valuable because they're next to the content. And so they actually, in many ways, perform as well or better than the ones that are sitting very, prominently at the top of the page. So that's the issue. One good thing that Reader does is, I'm not a big fan of going to a site that forces me to click through 5 different pages to read one article. I think if you're going to have one article on the web, you put it on one page. And if you feel like it's too long for one page, it's probably too long for the web. And I say that as somebody that's been publishing content on the web for the last 11 years. But what Reader does is it goes and finds all of those pages and stitches them together into one seamless article. The problem is now you've triggered ad views on all those future pages and you haven't seen a single one. So it's actually false ad views that Reader is pulling them but not ever displaying them to the user. And now you're talking about Reader is artificially inflating stats and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's where it gets to be a problem.
Okay. No, that's a good point. Yeah. And my example –
But I think those people that do multi-page articles like that should be penalized anyway. So, I don't feel so bad.
Oh, yeah. Especially what I see a lot of times is when people do slideshows, there's no reason – you need to do a new page load for each picture. There's certainly technology where you can load an image without reloading the rest of the page.
Right.
And I see, HuffPost and a few other people do that a lot.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway.
I don't know if it's a good segue here. Speaking of ads, I did see, I don't know if you want to talk about iAd. I think there was some additional news about that. Or if you want to get, what do you want to do?
I'm looking at our thing here. So the Wi-Fi here at the Intercontinental, we'll probably wind up using this hotel and offering you folks a deal during Macworld Expo. So very briefly, I'll say that they've got wired and wireless in the rooms. The connection's been great. Monday night was a great stress test because Apple released a couple of new developer resources that were very large on Monday and then also Safari 5. And so everyone in the hotel was downloading all of this stuff. And bandwidth slowed down to a crawl. What was very interesting, though, was that latency or ping times or the time that it takes a packet to get out and then get a reply back stayed very, very low. And that's a good thing. It means that the network was managed well enough that even though you might not be able to download Safari and all these other, you know, multi-gigabyte things very, very quickly, you could still check your email pretty reliably. And it's not perfect, but it is the best I've ever seen in a hotel in a situation like this where it's, you know, totally oversaturated with maniacs. And the hotel kind of learned from it. In fact, I came to do this show right from a conversation with the management here at the hotel, and they said, gosh, you know, I wish we had known, because we actually have the ability to add more bandwidth, you know, kind of on the fly, but we don't do it. We didn't know that that was going to happen. And I said, okay, well, you know, for Macworld Expo, we'll work together on it. And I said, you give me a line, I'll let you folks know, and we can make this work. So it's pretty. They're very aware that technology is important, and it's also a really, really nice hotel. The rooms are great. The restaurants are great. The location is fantastic. You walk about 200 steps, and you're in the Moscone West, which is where WWDC and Macworld 2011 are.
Okay. So we won't have to do the hokey pokey.
Nope.
That's nice.
Nope. We're locked and loaded.
Yeah, because crossing that, the street there was...
There's no crossing the street. It's in the same block.
I know.
Yeah.
As I was saying before, it was north, south, and west. So you had to...
No. I mean for the hotel. The hotel and the Moscone West are in the same block.
No, what I'm saying is the next Macworld will not require you...
Right.
Based on what you're telling me, they're going to put everything, both the exhibits and the conference and everything in west.
Correct.
Excellent.
Correct.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to it.
Yep. All right. Well, how long have we been going here? You know, we might just,
about 40 minutes, I think.
About 40 minutes. Do you want to answer some questions here, or should we just call this and move on?
I think we should. I'd like to answer some questions. I will say, now, how did I know it was 40 minutes, Dave? And I'm just going to say, so I recently, because, you know, I want to be like Dave here. I've actually been for the last few shows here, and also for some of the other podcasts I've been doing, I'm right now, even on my lowly G5 here, which, you know, is aging. Yes, I will get a new machine someday. But I've been using Wiretap Studio to record the audio here. And as far as I can see, it's not killing my machine here. It's doing very well. So in the unlikely event Dave gets a hiccup, I can provide some backup audio, as well as for the other things that I'm involved with. So... And obviously it has a time counter. So anyways, moving on. But, you know, that's from our pals at Ambrosia who make all sorts of cool stuff.
They do. Yeah, absolutely. All right. You know, in looking at the time, there's actually a session I need to get to over at the conference center. So I think we will call this, John, and we'll leave it as a WWDC and travel show, as you so wisely suggested. In our little pre-show.
Every now and then I get it right.
Yeah, man.
All right, Dave. Well, I guess at this point we got to talk about how to get in touch with us. And one way I would do that is to call us. And you can pick up the phone. You can call us at 206-666-GEEK, which is
4335. Or you can email us at feedback@macgeekgab.com.
You know, Dave, I'd much rather email us at feedback@macgeekgab.com.
That's right. feedback@macgeekgab.com. If you are a premium subscriber, premium@macgeekgab.com. And if you're not a premium subscriber, well, why aren't you? It's so much fun. We have we do two extra shows a month. You have access to all the archives. And you get to lend a little help here in making the Geek Gab what it is. So... We definitely appreciate all of you premium subscribers. You all got notes recently migrating us from the former PayPal engine to the new FoxyCart engine. Those are real notes. Anybody signing up anew will just be part of the new engine. You won't have to convert anything. But I think we've made the conversion process very simple for everybody else. In fact, I think almost everybody's converted by now anyway. So.
Okay. Skype. You can Skype to Mac Geek Gab if you really want to.
That's right.
It works out.
Michael Johnston from the We Have Communicators podcast converts this to AAC. Cashfly, CACHEFLY.com provides all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. The podcast marketplace includes the A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, Yojimbo and BB Edit from Barebone Software, PDF Pen and Text Expander from Smile on My Mac, Notebook from Circus Ponies, and GoToAssist.com/Gab gets you a 30-day free trial at GoToAssist Express from Citrix. All right, that's it, right? We're ready to get out of here, John?
I think so, and you know, I would assume, Dave, that during your travels, the TSA was nice to you. And
no problem with the TSA this time around. I left the iPad in my carry-on, along with my 311 security bag of all my liquids.
And nice, and they picked right up on that.
Both sailed through like nothing. That's right.
Yeah. Which means?
Security theater.
Well, and also, as I'm happy to say, it means that you didn't.
I didn't get caught. That's right. Have fun, everybody. We'll be back Monday, and as John said, don't get caught.
Maynard.